Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, I'm Janet. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what is a podcast?
It's like the radio, but there's no music, and literally anyone can do one at any moment about any subject. And there's a billion of them.
Sounds great. Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today, we're talking about Chapter 21, Season 2, Episode 7, Derek, directed by Jude Wang and written by Cord Jefferson. Eleanor keeps the tape of her and Chidi saying, "I love you," a secret from Chidi. Janet experiences the highs and lows of a tumultuous relationship with her new boyfriend slash son, Derek. Tahani and Jason decide to get married, but Michael and Eleanor try to stop them due to the effects on Janet. Ultimately, Janet comes to terms with Jason's new relationship and reabsorbs Derek's essence and puts him in a casket in her void. Eleanor shows Chidi the tape. Michael makes progress in becoming human by asking Eleanor for ethical advice on whether to kill Janet and or Derek and admitting that moral decisions can be difficult. Michael returns to his office to find Sean waiting for him. My guests today are Jeff Rosenberg, key second assistant director, and Jason Mantzoukas, who plays Derek.
Derek.
Jason and Jeff, welcome. Everything is great. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me as well.
Is this where you thought it would be? You're looking around as though...
This is exactly what I thought it would be, yeah. We're on like the 22nd floor of a gigantic high-rise.
Right, in a tent made out of furniture pads.
Like 125 degrees outside.
It's very luxurious.
It literally is 110 degrees outside.
Isn't that nuts?
I thought I might die.
We're recording this on the 6th of July, 2018, and I just came from the parking structure and legitimately looked up the temperature because so terrible.
Yeah,
just the worst. Jason Mantzoukas, talk a little bit about where you come from. You're in everything and you're so great in everything. And how did you get into this? Into comedy, into acting? How did you become Derek?
I came out of the UCB scene, the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater comedy scene in New York, starting in the late 90s, basically, 97, 98, and came up in kind of that scene that... was built around that theater, a lot of the people that you see on TV now, including Darcy Carden, who plays Janet, come out of that scene. And it's like primarily an improv and sketch theater that is focused on long-form improv. And, you know, I spent the last, you know, I just went back to do a festival last week that was the 20th anniversary of the festival we've been doing now for 20 years, which blew all of our minds and made us all feel very old. So I came up in that scene and then started working, you know, in TV, doing the bit parts here and there, and then eventually getting slightly bigger parts. I enter the Mike Schur universe as Dennis Feinstein on Parks and Rec.
Yes.
Many years ago. Much like you, I've now, I believe, been in the last three Mike Schur shows, Good Place, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Parks and Rec, which is absolutely delightful.
Oh my goodness. Isn't that the greatest?
It is the greatest.
Do you have an academic background in acting or comedy?
I don't.
No, neither do I.
I come out of literally just doing it through UCB.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they had a class structure and all that stuff, but I took a couple of acting classes, just generally speaking.
Sure.
But no, I didn't study in college. I didn't do anything like that. It really is all kind of, I put in my 10,000 hours, Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours on the stage, you know, under a Gristiti's supermarket in Chelsea in New York.
What had you in New York? Are you from that area?
I'm from the East Coast. I'm from Boston. I grew up outside Boston, like suburban Boston. And then I really overly romanticized New York as a place to live as a kid. And I had an aunt who lived there, so we would visit there, and it just seemed like awesome.
Yeah.
It seemed like everything. And then I got very lucky in that when I was kind of ready to move to someplace, was right as UCB was beginning. They had, you know, the UCB was a group. They started in Chicago. They moved to New York and started this theater. And so then it was like right in the kind of beginnings of that kind of scene. So I moved there essentially in hopes of doing improv and sketch right as like this very kind of amazing scene was just starting up.
Would you recommend for anybody wanting to follow in your footsteps or get into this business, recommend improvisation?
Oh, yeah. I would recommend improvisation for anybody. You know, I think it's a skill set that is applicable, you know, across the board to life, you know. You know, especially if you want to be like a comedic actor or any kind of actor, the ability to be, as you know, you come from a Second City background.
I do.
As you know, it is a skill set that is constantly useful and applicable to kind of almost anything you do, whether it is, you know, it might not be in the work itself. You might not be improvising on the day on the set.
Sure.
But sometimes it's in rehearsal or sometimes it's in the building of a character or whatever. So I think improv, and then also like I have friends who've taken improv classes and found it useful because they are lawyers or because they are, you know, they have a job in which they need to be comfortable being on their feet, speaking off the top of their head. They want to just have a skill set or a tool kit that allows them to be more comfortable in the moment, really. That moment-to-moment work, everything that actors strive for, like being in the moment, moment-to-moment, present tense acting with a script, like if you don't have a script, you have to be in the moment.
Right, you have to react.
That's really great.
It removes all fear, I think, and it teaches you to say a lot of yes on stage and off.
Oh, yeah.
And I would guess that you're like I am in this regard as well. When your agent calls and says, Mike Schur wants to know, you go, yes.
Yeah. Oh, literally.
Yeah.
My agent called and said, oh, Mike Schur wants to call you to talk about The Good Place. And I was like, well, you can just tell him I'll do it. And they were like, oh, no, he wants to call you and pitch you the character. And I was like, yeah, great. I'm happy. I would love to talk to him about it.
But book it out.
You could also just tell him I will do it. And then Mike called me and he said, hey, I'd love to tell you about this character. And I was like, great, I'm in. Just so you know, whatever you tell me, I'm going to do. But like, yeah, let's hear about it.
What did he say? How did he pitch Derek?
He said it was such a great conversation. He called me and he said, so I want to pitch, because I'd already, season one had already happened, and I was a fan. I loved it. I thought it was terrific. And I found the turn at the end genuinely surprising and shocking, and it was exciting to me. I was like, I wrote him an email, and I was like, this is exciting. Like, that you've done this on network television. You've managed to keep, you've built a mystery box show without anybody realizing it's a mystery box show.
Right.
And that's exciting. This reveal was wild. And I was like mad that I didn't see it coming.
Yes.
You know, as somebody who like understands comedy and loves television,
as
I was
someone who's
furious.
Looked inside the dumpster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was furious that I was not able to see it coming. So I wrote him this note. And so he called me and he said, okay, so it's this character you'd be playing opposite Darcy. And I was like, yes, 1,000,000% yes. Because I've known Darcy for, I don't know, 12 years, 15 years, something, whenever she started at UCB, a little behind me. And then he explained what the setup was, that she was going to create a rebound guy and that he would be kind of not fully formed. And the way that he explained how it would be done, which I loved, which a lot of the lines still are, especially in that first episode, are they were going to write dialogue for my character, use Google Translate to translate it into two other languages. They were going to send it to one language, then that language Google Translate to a second language, then they were going to retranslate it back into English.
Oh, my God.
And that would be my character's lines.
Is that what they did?
And so that's what they did.
Oh,
that's
my God.
That's what they did for a lot of the first lines. So when I got the first script, it was like nonsense. It was actually really hard because I was like, oh, I get what the first line was. Yeah. I can intuit what the first line was, but this is just nonsense. And it was fun. It was great. Yeah.
What a challenge.
Yeah. And I was like, I love what you're doing. I love that this is what you guys are up to over there.
Well, it's like they've have mastered television that they're like, let's ruin it.
Yeah. Oh, let's really just ruin it. Like really just mess around with it.
Oh my goodness. Jeff Rosenberg, Rosie?
Oh, yeah. Come on, Rosie.
Right?
I'm Rosie. Most people call me Rosie.
I mean, do you like that? Or is it just that television and film set is such a baseball dugout that everybody could become something E?
It happened on like my second day working. Like people
on the show?
No, ever.
I've known Rosie since a TV show called The League.
I've known Jason for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So Jason and I go far back.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And he was Rosie then.
I was Rosie. It was my second day. I'd lived in LA for 3 days. I was sleeping on a deflated air mattress in a Hollywood apartment behind a curtain.
Brag.
Yeah. It was a good life. I was near a Burger King.
Sure.
I mean, whatever, no big deal.
Oh, life's right? Double brag.
Yeah, I was crushing it. And
Yeah,
they the first syllable on walkie-talkie communication cuts off sometimes. So people would say, like, Jeff, can you go grab the background? And all I would hear is, can you go grab the background? And then it would turn into a AD screaming at me.
Right.
So this like Southern prop guy was like, you need a longer name. I'm going to start calling you Rosie.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
And it just stuck. It hasn't gone away. So like at my wedding, I had the hair makeup team from The League doing makeup for my wife. And like my grandma's like, who is Rosie? Who do you keep? Who is this woman you keep talking about?
Oh, no, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm Jeffrey to my family. I'm Jeff to my friends from home. And in this world, I'm Rosie.
I like it. What is a key second AD?
So the easiest way to break it down would be the first AD is in charge of everything on set. So the first AD is the one who calls action, roll camera, roll sound, all that stuff. And the second AD is in charge of everything offset. So my job is basically to make sure that whenever we move on to the next scene, whatever we're going to shoot the next day, if there are any problems, I'm the one that just makes sure everything's there. So if we need a bunch of ambulances and a bunch of extras in a scene, I'm the one who makes sure those people are there at a certain time. If we're running ahead of schedule, I'm the one who texts you guys at 6 a.m. and says, we need you here in 45 minutes because something changed.
Yeah.
So mostly I'm in charge of just getting all the pieces there so everyone can play with them on set.
And what comes before? Like, there's also something called the second, right? Is that sort of your assistant?
Yeah.
Is that an unofficial?
There's like a whole assistant director department, and
right.
it can break down. Everyone does it a little differently, but at this point, for the most part, the first AD is in charge of set. They're there with the second, who's going to be the person running around making sure the air conditioning is on and making sure that all the PAs know where they are to stop people from walking through the shot. Then the PAs are, you know, you have a PA in charge of the actors who's making sure the actors go to sound and get wired.
Mm-hmm.
You have a PA who's in charge of extras. You have another PA who's in charge of all the walkie-talkies. Then you have an additional second AD who's the one in base camp getting everybody ready.
Okay.
And then you have me stuck at a computer telling sort of moving all the pieces around that are offset.
Wow.
It's a whole hierarchy of...
Well, it's literally a hierarchy, right? A lot of people come to Hollywood and start, regardless of their experience elsewhere in the world, they come and start as a production assistant, a PA, right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most valuable and fun tools to me about like IMDb now.
Hmm.
I think back in the day, you would just see someone like Roman Polanski or something. You'd be like, oh, that guy just started directing.
Mm-hmm.
And now with IMDb, you can look and be like, oh, I wonder what this person did. And you can just see that like, insert examples, but people were, you know, a craft service assistant back in the day on some movie, and you can see how people came up, because it's rare that people just immediately go up to higher
Steven
positions.
Steven Spielberg was a craft services assistant for many, many
there
years.
There you go.
This feels like a bit.
Yeah, it is a bit.
The fact that
that would have been a good example, but it would have been wrong. So I'm glad Jason did it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
J.J. Abrams made coffee for years.
His coffee is legendary.
Really good.
Yeah.
The thing is, he did do something menial.
Is that true?
I don't know what the task was, but J.J. Abrams, I'm sure, did a menial task.
He did. He was like,
Still a bit?
No, now it is real. I believe he got hired as a teenager to archive all of Spielberg's childhood films. Or not childhood, young, like, stuff.
Student films.
He got hired almost like to archive stuff. As like, because I think he was a local teenager.
Wow.
Something like that.
Well, it's like Kenny Roth, one of our ADs, started as Lorne Michaels' assistant on Wayne's World.
Whoa.
Like tracking the dailies on it. That was his first job ever in the industry.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so if you just start, usually the path, you don't really know how you're going to wind up where you are. It's just a lot of like-minded people who moved out here because they loved film and television, and they just wind up in departments. And
you work your way up. And that's not dissimilar for us.
That's what we do.
You come up in Detroit, right?
Yep.
And come here when?
2001.
Yeah.
January 2001.
And so at some point, you know, I'm sure you were in a million commercials.
Oh, I mean, I did things in which I said nothing.
Yeah,
got a tiny role on a sitcom called One on One on the UPN network with my first, like, Hollywood credit.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, I had worked with Jason on a few things before the league, and I would be told by, you know, the other UCB people, like, Jason is the funniest improv guy. Like, everyone would talk about how great Jason was, and it was sort of like I would watch him work, and I'd be like, I don't know when it's going to happen. And I'm there in Vegas when Rafi drops the bathrobe, and I'm like, well, here's Jason. Like, he's about to get unleashed on the world.
Yeah.
And then it happened. And you just watch people that you're friends with just explode in this way.
A really slow motion explosion across the course of 15 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it only took 15 years.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my goodness.
I had a casting director say to me once, very early on, like in 2003 or 4, probably one of my first pilot seasons out here. She was like, you're not going to work for at least another 10 years. She was like, you're really funny.
Yeah.
But like, nobody's looking for you. Nobody's looking for what you've got. Like, so like, just keep going. Don't get discouraged. But like, it's going to take a while for somebody to take a shot on you. And it really was about 8 or so years later that I got the league. And it really was once that one job happened, then it was like a cascade of other things.
Sure.
It took that show for people to be like, oh, I see how to use him
right.
In a weird way.
I have a guess as to who that casting director is, and I hope that you'll tell me afterward.
I will.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I won't because I can't. It's not who you think it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because that person's dead.
Because she died by my hands.
She said 10 years and I killed her.
You know, the casting director strangler has never been found.
That's so weird.
It is so weird.
Yeah.
All those casting directors all strangled.
I know it's hot outside. Are you panicking right now? You're
what?
Sweating like crazy.
We're not recording this, are we? That's not an admission.
Rosie, is it unusual? I know that for this show, often the first ADs sort of rotate weeks.
Yeah.
Has that been true since season one?
Yeah. So season one, it all depends on the show. So like a show like The League or Documentary Now that I work on, we don't alternate first ADs.
Right.
On The Good Place, we alternate first ADs, but we don't alternate second ADs.
Okay.
On most hour-long dramas, they alternate both.
Okay.
So again, there's no just like dogmatic rules of what you do with the AD department.
Mm-hmm.
Like every UPM, which is David Hyman on our show.
That's a unit production manager?
Yeah. So
is
that's
that like money? Like, is that budget?
Yeah,
that's mostly
money and budget.
Okay.
So that's sort of the top of the DGA food chain outside of the director is the UPM.
Oh, I didn't realize that was a DGA
Yeah, so that's a DGA position. So the director and the first AD and the second, those three are sort of on set DGA positions. And then the UPM and the key second AD are sort of offset positions.
Interesting. And a UPM's deciding, like, we can only have one giraffe.
Yes.
For this.
Yeah, the UPM. The UPM.
A literal concern for
this show. For this show.
On this show, that is a literal concern. Yeah, the UPM and the line producer together.
Line producer, sure.
So, like, I'll go to the cinematographer will tell me we want 4 cameras on Monday.
Uh-huh.
At that point, what I need to do is I go to the UPM and say, hey, David, the other David wants 4 cameras.
Because normally it's 3.
Yeah, because normally we carry 3 cameras.
Uh-huh.
And so then they confirm that we can do it. And then once we have the word that 4 cameras are approved for Monday, that it makes sense, then I'll go to the camera department and say, you need to book another camera operator and other assistant cameramen.
Wow. It is an intricate puzzle on any show, but this one in particular, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. And then we alternate episodes. You know, if I'm at any given time, I'm working on at least 2 episodes at a time. So I'll have to leave set to go scout the next episode. And sometimes we're scouting far in advance. If we're doing, you know, more complicated things with either visual effects or things like that, we'll be looking at things 4 or 5 episodes out.
As if, hypothetically, you had just scouted the season 3 finale.
As if I had done that yesterday,
Interesting.
Which I might or might not have because I was told not to talk about season 3.
That's correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And I don't want to say anything, but just for the, you just mouthed the words Six Flags. Is that weird?
And now
I can't read
I think
your lips.
Even the
you cannot read my lips.
I think you just said French Laundry, the restaurant in Northern California.
Napa, California.
Which I went to a few weeks ago, and it's fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
That. Group mine.
I'm so slow to even joke about season 3 because Six Flags is possible.
Yeah, I guess
it is. You know what I mean?
Is.
Like,
yeah.
I'd
love to just put out a bunch of false rumors right now.
Oh,
I heard the season finale of season 3
what are you doing?
Takes place underwater.
It could.
I heard that it takes place in an Atlantis type place.
I will not confirm anything, but we did all get scuba certified, the entire
group. Oh, see, and I did too.
You guys.
I'm not saying Derek's in it and is revealed to be the king of Atlantis, but... I'm not saying that.
I think Mark should ask a question.
I know
this
you're
point.
Joking, but what if you're close?
Then they'll edit this out.
Oh,
this guy's scribbling wildly over here. I don't know what's going on. That is illegible, by the way. That is, Rosie, what are you, a phlegmy cough? This is an audio format,
I was trying
Rosie.
So hard not
Get
to phlegmy
together.
Cough. I've been taking so much DayQuil for the last 4 days to be ready for this.
So many people listening to this podcast are like, oh,
shirt.
I hope I don't get sick from this podcast.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Keep your phone away from your head. Okay. When Derek says the words, Jason,
yeah.
Jason,
that was
Jason,
weird.
What did the script say? Was there any direction?
No.
Okay.
No, I think it just was the name Jason over and over again.
Okay.
I don't remember. I don't think I did it to the number of times it was there.
That's what I'm asking.
But
yeah.
That was like, it just said the name Jason. And then it had the parenthetical of he holds up the sign
right.
That said, help, I can't stop saying Jason.
That Wile E. Coyote moment
yes.
Is so funny.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. That made me so happy. And so that was, and that had the, you know, the weird snake eating its own tail of that is my name. So that
yeah.
Was really strange to do.
That is weird.
But that, I loved that. I love how silly I get to be as this character. Like
oh, yeah.
The absolute kind of innocence and naivete of this, like barely this broken fawn of a person
yeah.
Is really fun because like that turn it takes where he starts to panic because he can't stop saying
right.
Jason was very fun.
He's drowning in the word Jason.
Exactly.
Yeah. And just his glee, his childish glee at like, I have a hanger for my jumpsuit. It's so dumb.
So stupid. It is such a stupid person to play, but like full of joy.
Was it pitched as a one-off, or were you told it would recur?
I was told that, it was not, I wasn't told it would recur, like it would be ongoing, but I was told that it was introduced at the end of
That's
one
right.
episode,
right.
And then would kind of be the kind of A story of that next episode,
mm-hmm.
And that would be it. And then it was kind of a surprise to me that they kept me around, you know, and I initially thought that would be the end of that story once it was done, and then instead of kind of killing me off, they put me in a box and put me in the void, and then I kind of pop up later in the season to drive the train away and like as a diversion basically.
Right.
So that was really fun. Like I got to have another little kind of a couple more little blips in there, which were funny and gave us Maximum Derek and a bunch of other fun things.
Oh, Maximum Derek is a phrase that I use now.
Great.
Yeah.
That's everything. That's all I want.
That's something that I really enjoy about this show is that I've legitimately picked up some turns of phrase like walk it off, Lululemon. but Maximum Derek, I use.
Oh, great.
Oh, my goodness.
I hope that catches on. I saw somebody had made Maximum Derek t-shirts.
Oh, really?
I was like, these guys are going to get sued.
They should. But they should also be exonerated because NBC should have beat them to it.
How can
I
you not?
I don't understand
how
that.
How can you not?
Yeah.
Come on, NBC. Get it together with your swag and your merch.
I love that this episode also includes a 2-second blip of one of my favorite movies, Home Alone. do you have any idea, Rosie, what that cost to put in a 2-second?
I do not know what it cost, but...
I mean, those are fascinating questions to me. When we pay for a song for something,
yeah, yeah.
Who let the dogs out or something like that? Like, you know, I often am curious. Like, was it worth it?
It's weird as an assistant director when there's stuff in the script. I feel like if I try to guess at which ones are like, oh, yeah, of course we've cleared that. And then there's other ones that I assume are a non-issue that there's just like, oh, there is no way in hell we're going to get that. You need to change it.
Mm-hmm. Well, whenever you write something or whenever you do something and put something in, I'm always shocked at what it, I'm always trying to use Montel Jordan's This Is How We Do It. And it's like $25,000.
Oh, easily.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that's worth it.
I agree.
You're saying it's crazy that they don't use it every single time you request it.
That's what I mean.
Full episodes of The Good Place are available on the NBC app and NBC.com. Let's listen to a clip.
Tell Janet that Derek can stay, but she's got to keep him under wraps so that none of the other demons find out.
Fine. As long as they fly under the radar and Janet stays happy, I think we'll be safe.
Great.
Janet?
Because the truth is, you don't respect me, and you never have. Because to you, I'll always be that guy you made.
Guys, what's going on?
Okay, can we not do this in front of my friends?
Oh, so they're your friends now. I'm stating a fact. They are your friends. I don't know these people. I am out of here.
Oh, great,
I'm going to go back to our void, and I'm going to try and forget this ever happened.
It is not your void.
Oh.
It is my void.
Wow.
I know it's a boundless, barren nothingness, but you are always there.
Fine, I'll go somewhere else.
Fine!
No, not fine. Don't go somewhere else.
Okay, yeah. We're forked here, aren't we?
How much of that fight was scripted?
Most of that fight is scripted.
Okay.
You know, like some of the kind of exasperated kind of stuff, the connective tissue of it is improvised, but most of like the kind of meat of what the fight is about, about like they're your friends, now I'm stating a fact, like all that's in there. So that was all scripted. But the kind of vehemence that Darcy and I came in real hot, a little of the lead up, a little of the kind of connective tissue is improvised.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's another example of sort of the childishness of it in the sense that Derek's just trying this on. Like, apparently this is how a fight works. I speak like this. I speak louder than normal.
Well, a lot of what I was doing, to kind of do this character is really, like, my starting point was what Darcy's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I, you know, like Rosie, you mentioned, like, it being a Meisner exercise earlier, like, there is an element where I am giving to Darcy what Darcy's giving out to me, you know? And so, like, that is, like, the basis of Derek is Janet.
Right.
In my presumption, because he is a piece of Janet made whole, you know, made into like Adam's rib.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so I'm basically a lot of times just taking what she's giving me and giving it back to her, just dumber and more with a goofier smile, you know, like a dumber, broken version of what she's doing.
I do feel as though, because this is such a plot and story heavy show, I know for myself, I improvise less on this than I do on Brooklyn Nine-Nine or in Parks and Rec, but somehow within the context of like Jason Mendoza or Derek, I think that a lot of those things you probably are able to play quite a bit, right?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, like I would always say it like this, like the script is always hilarious.
Right.
The baseline, crazy funny.
Yeah.
It's like a beautiful, beautiful meal, right? Yeah. And it's sometimes they let me like add a little bit of sauce or a little bit of salt or something, you know? And it's nice to be able to play. And Derek in particular is able to kind of have little moments that might not be in the script, but that are kind of, you know, oftentimes it's just simply saying his own name again.
Sure.
Like it might not have been in there that between these two lines, Derek might be like, Derek?
Right.
You know, but I'll give it a try if they let me.
Well, do it until they tell you to stop, right?
A little bit, or I'll ask, you know, a lot of times it'll happen in rehearsal, in blocking, you know, where we'll be blocking the thing and I'll be like, in between there, I could also go, Derek? You know, and people are like, let's do that, you know. Or, no, that doesn't make sense because we don't want to interrupt that flow of that thing, you know.
Right.
You don't want to steal focus, but you want to also, if you can, for me, it's about continuing to hit beats of a game I'm already playing.
Right.
Or just do a bit that I think would be a very funny, like Maximum Derek. I don't think Maximum Derek is in the script.
Are you serious?
I think it was just Derek again. I think maybe I added Maximum or maybe somebody pitched it from the back.
That's amazing.
Or something like that. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of that's a good example of how it might work.
Sure.
You know, where it's just maybe Derek in there, but like suddenly as we're doing it, it just becomes a little more playful and you just add a little bit of a thing.
There's, it's almost an acting exercise in the later in this season, the episode you're describing when you come back to pilot the train, there's an acting exercise, an improv exercise, where you say the same word or phrase through every emotion possible.
Sure.
As a question, through rage, softly, meaning I love you, that sort of thing. And when they're saying, we need you to do this, and you're going, Derek, like, I'm listening.
Yeah.
I'm still on board, kind of thing.
Well, it's almost like the game I said earlier of like them translating and then retranslating the lines.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like here are the lines you would be saying, but instead you can only say the word Derek.
I suppose when you're throwing in even little, interjections of like, oh, or yeah. From a directorial perspective, that's something we have to cover. You know, like that could take time. If that's not in the script and they weren't planning on it, like they might have to throw a camera over and pick that up, right? I guess with
yeah, Rosie, get cameras
yeah.
on me.
Yeah.
We need 4 cameras.
No, I mean, from my end, I've worked with Jason enough times that I wandered in there for rehearsal. Matt Quesada, who's an associate producer on this and gets the scripts early, he probably before Jason even knew about it, I was like, they're writing this absolute bananas part for Mandzukas. Mm-hmm. They're like, do you want to see this script? Because it doesn't make much sense, but you'll probably get a kick out of it. I was like, yes, of course, send me that right now. And I read it. I was like, from that day, I'm like, please, please let this work out. Yeah. And I will be there for the first rehearsal to see what the hell happens when him and Darcy are in a room playing this like weird Meisner exercise where they're just saying the word Derek and Jason over and
it
over
is
again.
A Meisner, yeah.
I mean, it was like, I mean, he's just like eating plants. He's walking up to the frame. And I know him enough to know that he'll go unhinged until they pull him back in. So I'm just like, oh, I just want to watch this thing.
Oh, yeah. In that first scene, I kept wanting to get up and stand on Michael's desk.
Sure.
And I kept trying to, and they'd be like, you just are getting out of frame.
Yeah, they're not going to relight that
you
high.
You can't do that. Yeah. And I was like, I just think it's so funny.
Our DP, David Miller, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But he's fairly scientific in how he lights the set. Everything's on stage. We have a grid, so we're ready to go. And then sometimes you'll have Jason wanting to stand on a desk, and they're like, got to get him down.
Somebody tell
this
him
is going to be problematic because we don't do long days on this show, and we need him to get.
And out. I will try and indulge, and,
sure.
and I don't, but I also don't want to waste time.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Was Derek Hostetler in the script?
Yes.
Was Derek Hostetler PI in the script?
No.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Did Kristen know that you were going to say that when you offered your hand?
No, not at all. Not at all.
That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And there was also a run in which I kept referring to myself as the Falcon, I believe.
Yeah.
Right?
You're doing
right?
Falcon noises and spreading your
arms. Yeah, there was a lot of like cacaing.
Yeah.
That was part of it. The game kept, almost as an improv game, each take,
sure.
I would add more to
you
the
have
name.
You because it's boring otherwise.
Exactly.
Yes.
I would add more to the name. So that's how we got PI. Then we got the Falcon. And then I started going, or something like that, you know?
It was that. No, there was a lot of cacaoing just echoing through the stage.
It was nonsense. And I mean, it helped, for me, it helps that like I'm surrounded by people that I know.
Yeah.
You know, Darcy, you know, Joe Mandy was there. People that I've known forever. You know, Morgan, all these people, they're Rosie, that are part of the show. So I feel very comfortable that, I'll try something or I'll pitch something or I'll ask if I can try something.
Right.
And they'll allow it or not. But the wild card for me was Ted Danson.
Yeah.
Because I don't know Ted Danson at all.
And he
up
is
until the table
Ted read. Danson.
And he's, to me, royalty, comedy. Sure. Like, I sat and watched, like, it was a lucky night if I got to stay up late to watch Cheers with my parents.
Oh, yeah.
So it is imprinted on my brain. So the first table read I showed up to, like, I was so happy to see all these people I knew from Parks, people I know from comedy. And then meeting Ted Danson, I got, like, nervous.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, ooh, I'm about to do this weird thing in front of Ted Danson.
Right.
And his first line to me goes, well, I've heard you're explosively funny. I was like, well, Ted, we're going to see.
The stakes are high.
Yeah, it was really fun. But I was like, that's what made me nervous. I was like, I don't want him to think I'm either unprofessional
right.
or that I'm just
forking
around on his
right.
set or just trying to be a weirdo for weirdo's sake. You know, I really wanted him. And so I was always trying to track him, and he seemed genuinely delighted by like the nonsense that Darcy and I were doing.
I think it's a new muscle that he was witnessing and really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah. My experience with Ted was he was the first one after I got downloaded the season one surprise, the twist from Mike. he was the first person I talked to. I got in the van with him and he's like, hi, I'm Ted. Any questions?
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's exciting.
It was crazy and great.
Oh, that's really neat.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
In a sense, a lot happens in this episode. Jason and Tahani almost get married. Then they have sort of a really nice time to connect. We see it on the beach with Eleanor and with Janet. They have a real friendship connection. And the same happens with Eleanor and Michael at the end, that he really just wanted to chat.
Yeah, I think for me what I found so interesting with all of season two, but especially in that moment, is that for season one, you don't really know what Michael's game is. You never ultimately see him without one of our four humans because it would, you know, essentially spoil the reveal at the end of season one. Mm-hmm. But I think season two, for me, that whole journey leading up to the end of it is about Michael discovering his inner human. And I think that really shows itself in their talk at the end of the episode, which I think is a pretty sweet moment between Kristen and Ted when she realizes that he is developing actual human emotions within his demonness.
Yeah, and I like, you know, season two also, like, had good pairings, you know, like, mm-hmm. everybody, you know, season one really has, like, all the four humans kind of together a lot and, you know, like, grappling with each other and stuff, and I like that it's, like, I like just even, like, Manny and Jamila off camping, playing croquet, all of that kind of, that's such a funny, like, it's one thing to watch all of season one and when it's Gianu, yeah. but like the juxtaposition of Manny's insanity, of that Jacksonville character, the Leonard, the description of Leonard Skinner High School as a series of tugboats, not on the water, tied together in a junkyard. And then he goes, it wasn't a very good school. Most classes were selling dirty magazines door to door. That shit is so funny to me. And her I think is like those two to me, and maybe it's just because they were to me the surprises, mm-hmm. you know, of the show is like they are so funny in what they're doing. And then when you put them together, it is a delight to have him just say absolute nonsense and her react was kind of priceless.
And even get on board to the degree to which she's running with the club screaming, the Jaguars are very good.
Yes. really funny.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Swanson Safe Company, making high-quality safes for your valued goods since 1838. Due to a recent legal entanglement that is frankly absurd, we are now required to say the following. Do not lock yourself inside a Swanson safe under any circumstances. In addition, do not lock yourself inside a Swanson safe with a snorkel, thinking the snorkel will somehow let you breathe. It won't. Furthermore, and I can't believe I, the representative of the Swanson Safe Company, even have to say this, but apparently I do. Inhaling nitrous oxide inside a Swanson safe is not a good idea, especially if you are already running out of oxygen. Swanson Safe Company. We make safes. You know, for things. Don't get in our safes.
It would be the worst nightmare of these characters to have someone as loose a cannon as Derek out there, potentially able to ruin, you know, their cover. I think Michael says at one point, like, what if Vicky calls up Janet and Derek shows up?
Yeah,
like, that would be terrible. So they decide to stop the wedding between Tahani and Jason. They decide that, I guess it's initially Michael's goal to kill Derek.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk within the episode from Michael of what is the ethical ramifications of my desire to just kill Derek.
Right.
And my favorite line of this episode is when he corrects himself and he says, oh, but what if killing Derek, I only want to do that to benefit myself. That's okay, right?
Right.
You know, I love that. And Ted delivers it with such like a, oh, I know, I figured it out. Right. I've learned the right lesson. It's okay to murder if it benefits me.
He does it one further later too. He says something like, "We have to kill the notion that we want this to happen or whatever." And then the whole thing's buried with the wink.
Yeah. Oh yeah. With Kristen's wink. Yeah. It's so funny. They're such a good like pair, Ted and Kristen, it's like a great kind of classic comedy duo. Mm-hmm. Them bouncing off of each other is so funny.
It happens too, a little bit earlier when Janet is saying that you could have a brother and that Eleanor needs a rebound guy. And she says it could be Stone Cold Steve Austin on Tahani's body. And Eleanor drops everything that they were talking about. It's like, or vice versa.
Yeah, or like, the other way around.
And then Ted, in that sort of comedy pairing way, goes, she's not going to build you anything. Moving on. Moving on. This show is just the craziest.
And it is so funny and chaotic and silly to be a network television show.
It shouldn't be a network
television. It really is so cool and exciting that this is what we get to do. This is what they get to do that we get to be a small part of.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, it's legitimately unbelievable.
Very lucky
that we get to come and do it. How did you get up in a tree?
Oh, a ladder.
Okay.
A ladder got me up into the tree, but it was one of those things where, like, once I was situated, it was just like crushing my balls.
Oh, yeah.
Just, and there was like, and it was like a while. I had to be up there for a while.
I mean, it would be 40 minutes at a time, right?
So it was not my favorite day, but it was very funny. It was such a funny visual that I like, because, you know, when we went down there, I was like, well, which tree is it? And they were like, that tree. And it was higher than I thought it was going to be. I was like, well, great, I'm in. But like, once I got up there, I was trapped up there.
Where was that? Backlot or?
That's backlot. There's always just this funny dynamic where like the stunt coordinator goes first. So like Sean Graham was up in the tree for a little while. And it's like, hey, Sean, how's it up there? He's like, oh, yeah, it's totally cool.
Right,
and then Jason's like to me, so what's happening? I'm like, you should get some sort of like cup or something on, because your balls are going to be on a tree branch for a while. Like, so I have to like decipher from Sean, put it through to a non-stunt coordinator who's like, hey, I'm just going to be, you know, spread legged on top of a giant tree branch for a few hours.
Sean, I'm sure, I'm just wearing a very thin polyester jumpsuit.
Oh, he had nothing. He's just he's hanging just out up there. He's just a dude.
It's the old
dude in a tree.
But it was funny.
Penis flattener.
Yeah.
This show bounces around so much in flashbacks, in locations throughout. That's got to be a logistical nightmare for the assistant director department to, you know, I would guess that the beach you shoot on is Point Doom, right?
We were at Leo Korea.
Oh, Leo Korea, okay.
So that specifically, you know, there's a lot of different beaches along the PCH and you're at different ones. That one's good for what we need because it's sort of just a cove that's isolated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a public beach, which most of those beaches are, which, you know, generally speaking, you're at a private location, you just shut it down.
Right.
There you can't do that.
Yeah,
it
belongs to the people of the state of California.
So, but because it's a cove, you don't have as many people there. There's less foot traffic. But the big thing with that one is you just have to figure out, like, tides.
Oh, yeah.
So there, for example, you're doing a wedding with 8 cast members. So you need to try to do it at a low tide point where you have as much length
beach
for your cameras, as much beach as possible. So I think that day we had a crew call of 5. I think we had actors starting to arrive at like 4:15 to get ready, and we had to hit the beach early.
Yeah.
So, but then we lug everything down there, and then we have like 4 set dressers with rakes that are constantly raking the sand, and then the death buttons, which we had been, it's the same beach we used season 1 for Janet for when we would murder her. And then when we suddenly had to murder Derek.
He says
Derek
so
Andrew,
casually.
Yeah, we had 2 murder buttons. So we would just have to move these giant things, throw them in the sand. We have people running around with rakes like maniacs. We have cast changing in a pop-up tent pushed as far back against the rocks as they can. Kristen just smiling with her weird umbrella harness. Everyone having a good old time on the beach.
What's an umbrella harness?
It's like to protect her from the sun.
Sure.
She's like wearing a thing that has an umbrella on
it.
Oh, it's like the most Kristen Bell like thing. Just perfect. It like
seems
encapsulates
like it's like from
everything.
A sharper image catalog or something. You know what I mean?
I bet she pulls it off. I bet it works.
She pulls it off.
Makes
it's like
work. It's also windy. That's the other thing. Like a lot of that scene has to be ADR.
I was
going to
say
of
it's
got to
be ADR.
Yeah.
And at that point too, like normally you might hold for sound and things like that. There you're like, the ocean is coming in.
Right.
Like we need to shoot this now.
Yeah.
And the post production team can figure it out later because we have to shoot.
I think we've talked earlier in this podcast about the rakes and stuff during the Janet death scenes, because anytime somebody comes in to fix her hair or makeup or whatever, there are footprints everywhere on the beach and it needs to look virgin. It needs to look pristine. So between every single take, someone's in there making it, like, do you have leaf blowers? How does it work?
I mean, it depends on what it is. But yeah, if leaves are an issue, we have leaf blowers. Yeah. If the sand's an issue, we have rakes. You know, hair and makeup are coming in constantly. I think since it's switched from video from film, you know, when it was on film, there was a lot more of a concern about, like, we're burning film. Like, this costs money. Like,
right.
Now we're on video, like, a lot of logic is don't cut. Like, we rarely cut. Cameras just sit on people's shoulders.
Running.
And just run.
Yeah.
Because it minimizes the time in between. Because each reset takes an amount of time. And I think especially when you wind up in, you know, improv-heavy shows or shows where a lot of rhythm is important, it's easier to just keep going. And so we'll go for a while.
Was Derek's death button, it was different,
oh,
and it
yeah.
was weird,
it's
right?
It's janky.
Yeah, it's got it's stuff like, it's, hanging
it's,
up.
It represents Derek. It is like, as Janet's is kind of sleek and, you know, looks nice, her death button, his death button looks like it's made out of spare parts.
It like, there's a like bunch it of, had coat hangers sticking
off
of it.
Yeah, it's like wires hanging off of it. It's like super janky. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that was like fun stuff to shoot, those kind of... That switch of being absolutely docile and standing there, and then the minute someone comes within your radius just begging for your life is a very fun thing to play.
The assistant director position is such an interesting one because it seems like the merge of two different skill sets. Like, looking at your IMDb, you've directed things. I would guess that's where you want to head, right, to do other things. So it seems like such a divergent thing of, like, the creative of telling stories and, you know, lenses and light and, like, serious logistics and administrative stuff.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, exercising different parts of the brain and figuring it out. I mean, ultimately, I would rather be directing, but at the same time, what this allows me to do, I mean, the three main shows I work on are like Veep, Documentary Now, and The Good Place.
Wow.
So I have a chance to watch Mike Schur, David Mandel, Bill and Fred on Doc Now. I have a chance to surround myself with a lot of what I consider comedy royalty and the actors that I'm able to watch work and the writers that I'm able to work with. So the experience that I can gain from that is fantastic. And then when I do sort of go off and do my own independent projects, I can use my AD muscle to essentially self-produce indies because I am so aware of what every department does at this point. Because I really am communicating with every single department.
Yeah, you are kind of the hub, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm sort of a hub for every person. So if anything changes, the text comes to me and then I'm responsible for knowing what to do with that information and what 12 people need to know what's changed.
In a moment's notice.
In a moment's notice.
On levels that are both massive,
right?
You know, in terms of the place we're at or the location, all this kind of big picture stuff. But then also, like, Rosie's the person that I text to be like, I'm 15 minutes late.
Me too.
Or to tell in Jason's situation that I'm on the other side of the casino in Vegas and I just accidentally ate some eggs and I'm going down. What should I do?
Yeah, I have a life-threatening food allergy to eggs.
You do.
And on one of our shoot days on the league in Las Vegas, one of my first days on the show, I ate like some yogurt and granola from Starbucks in Vegas and it had egg in the granola, even though the ingredients did not list egg, and wound up hospitalized. And so for like 7 hours of that shoot day was like unavailable.
Oh my
God. And Rosie's the first person I texted.
Yeah, I get a call from Jason that's like, hey, I just accidentally ate some egg. I'm going down. What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
And I was like, can you get to your hotel room? And he was like, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'll be there with the paramedics.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened.
He saved my life. I owe this man my life.
Wow. That's
And here we are.
And here we are.
That's 22nd floor, Universal.
Had I died that day, there would be, well, somebody else would be playing Derek. Who knows? Someone
might have
else.
Been better, might have been worse.
Who
knows?
Who knows who Mike Schur would be using to play weirdos if I had died 7-8 years ago.
Super glad you didn't.
I know. Yeah. Thank God.
Rosie, thank you for your work.
Of course.
Yeah. Before we go, let's talk a little bit about Wind Chime Ding Dongs.
Oh, yeah.
What was... You never wore one.
It's
in post.
It's all audio.
What are you picturing, though?
I'm picturing, like, you know, Based on the pitch of the sound they put
in. I'm so curious about this.
I'm picturing like small, you know, series of, you know, those long metal cylinders, wind chimes, around some sort of, you know, metal thing that hits them. Yeah. But like the miniature version of that. You know, not like the big, you know, like I'm picturing like a delicate, you know, like I'm going to say that, you know, the metal rods are from 3 to 6 inches long, length, maybe, you know.
Pencil diameter?
Probably they start at 3 and get to be 6, if you know what I mean.
I do.
And that's what I'm... And probably like a quarter of an inch around, maybe.
Okay. The I don't know why this is an ingredient in what I'm hearing in what they've used for the sound, but it's rusty to me.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You're gross.
I know.
How dare you?
Just the worst.
You're saying that Derek doesn't keep his wind chimes clean?
I'm saying he doesn't dry thoroughly.
He's 7 hours old.
Yeah, how could they have rusted?
I don't know. I mean, this you need to examine for yourself, Mark.
It's not just his brain that's broken.
No, that's true. Oh, yeah. I am surprised they do sound functional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's the thing. We hear them a little bit, but we never get to see them used. My hope, I'm just going to say this for season 3, is that we get to see like some sort of maybe, you know what, maybe a web extra of a tutorial of how the wind chime penis works as a functioning sex organ.
I'll say it. Spinoff.
Yeah. There we go.
Right.
See? Yeah. Derek gets out into the real world and he just starts. And it's like, it's, you know what? It's on premium cable.
Yes.
It is X-rated.
Oh,
and
for
you
sure.
See penetrative sex with the wind chimes. It is a porno. Here's what I'm going to pitch.
To NBC
I'm
Universal.
Pitching to NBC Universal. I'm pitching a pornographic spinoff show in which Derek and his wind chime penis become a hugely successful porn star.
The producer is scribbling like I've never seen before.
Cut. It's all just the words cut.
Gone.
Cut this. Cut that.
Gone.
Get this out of here.
Gone.
Can we cut? Can this just be an interview with Rosie?
Oh. Jeff Rosenberg, what's good?
Ooh. It's a bold statement here, but the Cleveland Browns' chance of winning the Super Bowl this season.
I recognize you're talking about sports.
Yes.
Same.
Yep.
Same. I'm with you.
What, are you being facetious?
Nope.
Oh, you're not. Oh, well, see.
Not at all. Cleveland Browns are going to win the Super Bowl this year. Place your bets, everybody.
Really?
No. But I hope so.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's, and you
It's
think,
a bold statement I'm making. I'm going for
Do you mean lie?
No, it's not. I'm lying to myself. Okay. Yeah, I guess it's a lie.
Are you from Cleveland?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, where?
I'm from Sugar Heights, Ohio.
Oh, nice. I shot a movie in Chagrin Falls once.
Ah, they have ice cream there.
Oh, it's very quaint.
Yeah.
Aggressively quaint.
They have ice cream there?
They have a famous ice cream
Rosie,
there.
Rosie, yeah, I have an update. They've got ice cream everywhere, you dummy.
There goes the phlegmy cough again.
God.
Oh, God, sorry.
He laughed, and then it caused like
I know,
a
I'm trying to not laugh at Jason,
erupt.
Which is very difficult.
Ugh, you're gross.
Jason Mantzoukas, what's good?
What's good? Since we're on a podcast, I'm going to say a couple of podcasts are good.
Great.
I like a podcast called Cocaine and Rhinestones. It is a documentary series about 20th century country music. So each episode is either about an artist or a song or a piece of country music history or lore.
Yeah.
I'm also really into a podcast called Binge Mode that is on the Ringer Network. They cover pop culture, they've covered Game of Thrones, but right now they're in the middle of dissecting all of the Harry Potter books and movies.
Oh,
which
wow.
I am delighted by, because I, as a 45-year-old single man, red flag, I am a huge Harry Potter fan.
Oh my
And
goodness.
It's so totally normal to be 45, single, and want to talk to kids about Harry Potter, right? So, if you've got a kid and you want to talk about Harry Potter, hit me up on social media.
Jason Mantzoukas and Jeff Rosenberg, thank you very much for being with us. I hope we same place again very now.
That's one of the translated lines.
I'm sure of it.
Oh, yeah.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Go do something good.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. And now, to deliver our credit sequence, is
Bad Janet. Take it away, Bad Janet.
Whatever. If you enjoyed this podcast, which, like, how is that even possible? Please subscribe. It's available on all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts. I don't even know. Or if you don't want to subscribe, you can also just listen to your mom's butt, you fat dink. You burnt.
Why don't I handle the credits? The podcast is hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Ew.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Who?
It's written by Lizzie Pace.
Okay.
And the music is composed by David Schwartz.
David Schwartz. See you next week, nerds.